Welcome to Transit Unplugged. I'm your host, Paul Comfort, and this is the world's leading transit executive podcast heard in 99 countries around the world. Thank you so much for being with us today. Every Wednesday, we bring you a fresh episode of Transit Unplugged. This week, we continue in the state of California here in the U.S. of A. with Ms. Tilly Chang. She's executive director of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. She's got so many things on her plate. You're going to really enjoy hearing all about the projects going on in and around San Francisco, which has one of the most complex transportation landscapes in the country. Lots of different agencies and organizations provide mobility and public transit in the San Francisco area, the Bay Area, as they call it. Today, she'll be talking about their countywide plan and autonomous vehicles, what they're doing on the streets right now. She comes from a planning background and is really in a great role to use that planning to help them plan their way out of this pandemic back into great service on the streets of San Francisco. We also take a lightning round, talking to her about her hobbies and latest books, music, pets, etc., for you to get a chance to get to know Tilly a little bit personally. Thanks for being with us each and every week here on Transit Unplugged. Enjoy today's interview with Tilly Chang.
What does it mean to be a successful public transit agency? What are you doing to lead the way? It's time to learn from the top transit professionals in North America. This is Transit Unplugged with your host, Paul Comfort.
Welcome to Transit Unplugged. I'm your host, Paul Comfort. And today is another exciting adventure into public transit leadership. Our guest on today's program is Tilly Chang. She's executive director of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority in California. Tilly, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Yeah. So Tilly and I were recently on another panel at some conference, and I was like, oh, I've got to have her on the podcast. She's amazing. And so I'm so glad you came to be part of the show today. We are in the month of March now in 2021, a full year after COVID really hit in America. And man, I mean, just generally, where do you think we're at a year into this thing, Tilly?
Yeah, thanks, Paul, for having me. I'm a big fan of Transit Unplugged, and I really appreciate this opportunity. Sure, I can't believe it's been a year. It's been the longest year, clearly, for so many of us. But transit in particular has really have been so challenged. And I'm really proud of our transit colleagues in our industry because this is an unprecedented circumstance. And they've been doing an amazing job with everything from PPE and keeping the systems clean, cleaner than ever, really doing the most they can and restructuring where needed. Our sister agency, the SFMTA, certainly has done a lot of that at Muni. And we're so grateful for the federal help, which has been absolutely critical. First COVID, then the CRISA, and now potentially a third relief bill. So cannot underscore enough how critical that is for systems large and small, right? Urban and rural. Right.
So let's talk a little bit about your agency to get started. And then I want to ask you something about yourself in a minute. But first off, let's set this up for the context. San Francisco has one of the most complex overlapping transit organizations, I guess, in the country. And I've heard so much about it from folks who have been there, from Nat Ford and others who told me about how when he was working there, can you kind of lay out the land for us? What's the lay of the land in San Francisco? How are all these organizations related? How many of them are there? And what's your role in all of it?
Sure. Yeah. Well, so the Bay Area is transit rich. I'm very pleased to report we have robust, typically ridership. Pre-COVID, Muni carried about 700,000 riders a day, BART about 425,000. So it's not maybe as well known that Muni carries the most riders in the whole system, followed again by BART and our heavy rail and Caltrain, our commuter rail, and really over two dozen transit operators, right, in the Bay Area. And that's serving about 7 million people in our region, 9 counties, 101 cities. We make it a little bit more complicated than it maybe needs to be or should have been, but we do have about over two dozen operators in our region for lots of reasons that we can get into in just a bit. But even that has been coming, you know, into focus and under study because the rider's perspective is really paramount. And so how do the riders really navigate all these systems every day, from maps and wayfinding to the fare system and discount policies and the affordability of transit? By the end of the day, if you've got to commute with two or three transfers, it's a challenge. So by now, there's a greater understanding of how important it is to take that rider-based focus and try and reform the system. And out of necessity, too, because we do have to tighten our belts and deal with financial realities. And so some of that is happening naturally during this time.
So tell us about your agency, the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. What's its role in that big group of transportation providers?
Great. Yeah. So our agency was formed about 30 years ago, back in 1989, to administer the halfpenny transportation, dedicated transportation sales tax. So we've by now distributed over $1 billion to voter-approved projects and programs, ranging from 65% of our program is transit. That would be Muni and BART and Caltrain. So not just the local, but the regional providers, but also all the different modes, bicycling and pedestrian safety, road resurfacing and signals and signs. So a lot of capital improvements. We also fund some paratransit, about half of Muni's paratransit budget. But it's largely a capital program, and it's designed to really kind of do two things. One, to kind of develop our pipeline of projects so they can compete for grants. And two, to actually serve as a local match for those grants. So each dollar we collect basically attracts 4 to 7 times its weight in state and federal grants. So, and that's true for a lot of the sales tax sort of self-help, so-called self-help counties here in California. There's about 25 of us.
Oh, okay. Well, tell us about that program. What is that?
Yeah, this was really an innovation from the Santa Clara VTA, Valley Transportation Authority, back in the 80s, out of the necessity, again, with the federal sort of role diminishing over time. And so voters in California, starting with Santa Clara, and then copied by the rest of us, a 2 dozen of us, have voted to tax ourselves. Now, sales tax not being as great a source, but it is broad-based. It's not as great from the standpoint of the regressivity of sales tax. But in our case, we tend to spend the funds on progressive things, things that are very, very affordable and accessible to particularly the lowest through the lowest income or most vulnerable. So it's broad-based. It generates for us about $100 million or more a year in a good year. And it's a critical stable source, notwithstanding the current cycle where it has been really reduced dramatically in this latest pandemic. We're about 30% down right now, and it's tough, but we do manage it over a 30-year period at a time. So we have the ability to sort of weather these peaks and valleys, and certainly it has served us very well over the past 30 years, helping us to fund some of our historic big projects, from our Third Street Light Rail extension to generations of Muni vehicles, buses and rail vehicles, BART station improvements, Transbay Terminal, our Transbay Transit Center at Salesforce Transit Center, where 13 different systems converge, and eventually our Caltrain, electrified Caltrain, which we have also helped to fund with these revenues. We'll go into the basement of that facility and help to connect our region and our state with high-speed rail also coming in to the transit center.
So your agency then provides capital funding and some match funding for all of the operating agencies in the county?
Right. Yes, that's right. Okay. And so San Francisco, you know, is highly regional. And over half of our workforce is regional. So we are very collaborative with all the different local and regional agencies, the big transit operators that you just mentioned, MTC, which is our regional MPO, our Federal Metropolitan Planning Organization. They really help us with this sort of financial engineering that it takes to do any you know, major project. And each generation of these has been identified through our countywide long-range transportation plan. So every 4 years, just as our regional agency, MTC, does the Plan Bay Area, you know, every 4 years, a regional plan. We also update our countywide transportation plan in that same cycle. So this is a bigger update year for us as well. Plan Bay Area's blueprint was just sort of endorsed by the MTC and Association of Bay Area Governments boards. And so we will also be taking that and developing our own countywide plan consistent with the regional plan.
Very good. So the main providers, it sounds like, in the San Francisco area are Muni, right? Mm-hmm. So San Francisco Municipal Transportation Authority or something like that.
Agency, yep.
Agency, yes. And so what services do they actually provide? Bus and what else?
Sure. Yeah, they have such a diverse system. I'm sure they have like 7 or 8 different sub-modes. Certainly, wow. Bus. bus and light rail, the trolley bus within bus as well, cable cars. They've got all different kinds of modes.
Yeah, so that's the traditional cable cars that everybody thinks about, right?
Yeah,
in
exactly.
San Francisco, yes.
Yeah, and please come visit, even though they're down right now. We hope to bring them back, of course. Right now, the workhorse are the rapid lines, like maybe 12 to 15 of the heaviest lines carry a vast majority of riders.
Yes.
But the system is actually still producing, even right now, I think last I checked, it was 160,000 riders a day. Okay. And they've been doing an amazing job. They've had to reallocate the vehicles, the buses, to those sort of lines that really serve hospitals and commercial districts, getting essential workers to and from those places. And so we do have a lot of lines down still right now because they've had to restructure and sort of emphasize, you know, some of those more sort of essential lines for those types of travelers. Yeah. And so it's a tough time right now. Our Muni Metro is down, although they've just reopened a few of the lines, the light rail lines, and they're coming back bit by bit.
And what's the difference of service modes between BART and Caltrain?
Right. So they're both commuter-based service. Actually, BART's not just commuter-based. Everyone takes BART. BART's very, very extensive. It's the heavy rail sort of system that goes out to the East Bay and serves three counties, Contra Costa to the east and Alameda and San Francisco. There's also a line that goes to our airport. So if you come in and visit and fly into SFO, you can take BART right up to the city. And it's a great system. And they've done an amazing job, again, during this very difficult time to try and keep our riders coming back. You know, the systems are clean. At Muni in particular, there's a focus on frequency and reliability. So one of the things we love about BART is it's reliable and it's got its own dedicated right-of-way, the whole system, right? Muni operates on our city streets. And even now, there's still congestion in COVID right near the peak period, near the bridges. So as people kind of flock to their cars, unfortunately, with ridership and services being a little bit down, quite a bit down, excuse me, the folks are in their cars and there is congestion. So Muni has been trying to get their buses some dedicated lanes and signal priority and doing what it can to keep the buses moving.
And then what does Caltrain do?
Caltrain is the commuter service, right, between San Francisco and Gilroy. Gilroy is to the south of San Jose in the Silicon Valley area. And it provides primarily a commuter service. They have beefed up their midday service, understanding that they would like to get toward a BART sort of metro-like service there where anyone can kind of show and go. BART had 15-minute headways or even faster in the peak, or more frequent in the peak. Caltrain has been moving toward that. In fact, their business plan and their service vision is to get to BART-like service. And right now we're at 5 trains an hour and they want to get up to 8 and eventually high-speed rail, another 4. So we can get up to 12 trains an hour into San Francisco as their service vision by 2040.
Tell us about the late... Okay. Tell us about the latest on high-speed rail. That's been in the news a lot. The California high-speed rail project has, I understand they maybe just made some changes to make it only one set of tracks to start with or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Brian Kelly, the executive director of the California High-Speed Rail Authority, just presented their 2020 business plan to their board. It really kind of maintained, I think, the update from the prior business plan where the focus is on the Central Valley, Merced to Bakersfield, and getting service up and running as soon as possible, probably by 2025-2027 timeframe. And as I understand it, single tracking perhaps, but electrified service is the first idea, building upon that, coming up to the Bay Area in what they call their valley to valley strategy. So the Central Valley coming up to the Silicon Valley is the next piece of it, and then eventually getting down to Los Angeles to complete a statewide system. I think that they had a kind of a difficult start, but I think that they have really gained momentum. They're employing so many people. So not only will this help with economic development and really focus in a more sustainable way the growth in the Central Valley, but it's generating ton of jobs. And so they were talking about all the contractors and all the different suppliers and how this has multiple benefits for the state.
That's great. Speaking of Silicon Valley, though, that is kind of where you guys are, right? In the area of San Francisco. And you have a bunch of the big tech providers there. And so tell us a little bit about what they do for transportation.
Sure. The Silicon Valley sort of growth kind of manifested in multiple ways. From earlier on, they had what was known as the big employer shuttles coming up from the peninsula to San Francisco. A lot of the workers like to live up here or work down in the peninsula. So our US 101 highway corridor was really busy with commuters and also these larger employer shuttles. And we really helped to kind of fashion what was the right way to kind of manage that, because it's one thing to have these tech sort of employer shuttles running up and down the freeway, but another when they're kind of on the smaller city streets and the residential streets. So we worked early on with SFMTA, our partners over there at the city, and with the Bay Area Council to figure out how do we preserve all these incredible benefits of getting people to commute using shuttles, but also manage the system well within the city, whether that's a per stop, per fee, per day fee, so that we can staff up and make sure that the routes are running safely and running on the right streets and providing the facilities for the riders at those locations. And that was sort of our sort of public-private sort of collaboration phase one. Later on, this expanded from the private employers to the new mobility revolution, sort of some of which are anchored right here in San Francisco. And so whether that's car share and bike share and scooter share and our TNCs, the Lyft and Ubers and Chariot at the time and all that whole family of companies, that was kind of our next sort of wave of public-private sort of coordination, collaboration, to some degree, also regulation as well.
Interesting. So what does that look like now, that mix? I mean, a lot of cities, they're in LA, another big city. We recently had Josh Shank on, and he said they were doing microtransit, probably the biggest microtransit pilot in the U.S. with up to 200 vehicles. So tell us about the mix of new mobility, and where do you think San Francisco is going? What's coming? What's on your horizon there?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like I said, that was our sort of second wave. And the third wave, I think, will certainly include all those players, but also include autonomous vehicles, right? We have like maybe 30 or 40 companies in various parts of that supply chain testing in San Francisco. There have been four or five that have been permitted by our State Department of Motor Vehicles, and several of them recently started testing and deploying, more than testing, deploying kind of on our streets. So this is definitely where we're going, is trying to find the right sort of ecosystem and mix of services. San Francisco cannot do it on our own. We understand the demand for public transit exceeds probably, like elsewhere, our ability to supply it all. We have so much demand for transit. We were super crowded, BART, Caltrain, and Muni pre-COVID. And I expect all those folks to come back with these new vaccines rolling out, hopefully sooner rather than later. So we needed folks like the shuttle providers and all these innovative services. On the other hand, we also wanted to be sure that these services were equitable and that they were sustainable, environmentally sustainable, that they played well in the sandbox as far as our traffic laws and regulations. So we went for more of a permit-based system to try to communicate, hey, we're trying to achieve multiple goals here with our transit first policy in the city. Please work with us to help us maintain the priority for buses and bikes, and pedestrian safety, of course, is paramount with our Vision Zero. So we wanted to make sure like scooters stayed where they belonged and not on the sidewalks, you know, that Lyft and Uber really kind of prioritized safety and didn't clog up sort of our downtown streets as much, because we, at one point, we documented one in every four vehicles was a Lyft or Uber. So that's a lot in the downtown core, where we're really trying to keep it great. Transit accessible, right, and walkable. So we collaborated on things like geofencing certain areas around transit hubs, like our Caltrain station. Big events like concerts and ball games. There was a lot of collaboration and coordination with these companies to try and make it really easy for users to choose these sustainable modes. But then the permit system would kick in, so that we had a basis for truly understanding what was wanted, what was not wanted, measuring, you know, outcomes and keeping the lines of communication open. Recently, our sister agency, SFMTA, which they provide a lot of the permits, they just expanded their scooter permits just recently, like literally in a couple, 2 months ago, I believe, here in the later part of 2020, early 21. So, you know, that's really great. And I see them now citywide. The bike share, Bay Wheels, is citywide now. The scooters are citywide. Previously, they were kind of more in the core as the system rolled out sort of geographically. So I think we're going to hopefully see everybody in the best place for these different systems and working together with the city toward our climate and equity goals in particular, and our safety or Vision Zero goals, and instead of at cross purposes. One more thing I should mention is that our agency is actually a sponsor of one of these pilots. We're sponsoring autonomous technology on Treasure Island. Treasure Island is a neighborhood in San Francisco just off the Bay Bridge. It's an island, of course, between Oakland and San Francisco. And it's kind of a perfect place to test the deployment of these first, last mile and circulator shuttles for the island communities. There's a Yerba Buena and Treasure Island. And so that provides us some sort of diverse geographic and weather conditions out there. Yerba Buena is very steep and it has these tight hairpin turns, whereas Treasure Island is flat and they both are out in the bay and have different weather conditions. So with the federal government smart city grant that we receive, we're testing that. And I believe we're in the RFP stage for the autonomous shuttle pilot. You should be hearing more about that deployment later this year. Yeah, and so that's one area where we are also taking a lead in piloting these new technologies.
That's awesome, Tilly. Well, I mean, with all the things you have in the planning cycle, as well as what's happening, it's a good time to take a look at your background and career. You started out as a planner, right?
Oh, yes, I'm still a planner. I call myself a planner. Yeah, I came up through...
Now tell us of your career and how you ended up there. You've been there for 18 years now.
Yeah, I'm so fortunate to be here. I really feel San Francisco's planner's nirvana. I came up through an internship at VTA. Back then, it was called the Santa Clara County Transportation Authority. And that exposed me to this amazing industry. And I fell in love with transit at that time. We also had great role models. I grew up in San Jose, and we had then Mayor Norman Mineta, then eventually Congressman and then Secretary Norman Mineta. Right. So, I mean, just amazing leadership and inspiring leadership for somebody coming up. At Berkeley, I studied economics and I took a urban geography class. Again, was so fascinated with cities and the role of transit in cities. I ended up doing a planning minor in the city and regional planning department, went on to study in graduate school at MIT and got my first job in DC at the World Bank. So I was so fortunate to work with some of the best folks ever working in East Asia, China, Mongolia, Malaysia for about 5 years. And there I was supporting a lot of project managers called task team leaders, which would have these big sprawling teams coming in, working with the borrowing city or province jurisdiction, trying to figure out how to do urban transportation and try and avoid some of the mistakes that, you know, we had made moving more toward a sustainable approach. And it was interesting to see investment moving inland at the time I was there, for example, in China, and to really understand the role of infrastructure and transportation and transit in economic development and lifting people out of poverty. From there, I came back to California and spent 3 years at a startup doing some marketing. That might have seemed like a weird detour, but it was one of the most rewarding jobs I took. It was during the dot-com boom. And it was wireless technology, and I learned about marketing, and I learned about wireless solutions. And that company eventually got acquired and taken up in the East Coast. So I looked around and was ready to kind of re-enter U.S. transportation after being away for several years, and was so fortunate to find this agency, the San Francisco County Transportation Authority, where I became countywide plan manager. So I helped do the first countywide transportation plan in 2004. And I've been here since, and as executive director over the last, I guess now 8 years. Prior to that, I was the planning division manager.
Yeah. And for one of the most iconic areas in the world, I think. I mean, San Francisco has always been one of my top three favorite cities to visit. Such a great job to have there. All right, I'm going to do a lightning round with you, and then we're going to talk a little bit of policy and theory. But first, okay. Our lightning round, what some kind of personal questions, not that much, but what are your favorite hobbies? What do you like to do outside of work?
Oh, we like to play tennis, our whole family. So, and we also we bike, and recently got some electric bikes so that we all fight over two of them for our family. So yeah, biking and tennis are
really. That's fun. What's the last really good book you read? Do you remember?
That is a really good question. What was it? I'm reading Boots on the Ground, which was edited by Grace Krunican and a bunch of other amazing women about leadership in transportation. And then beyond that, I've really enjoyed things like Tina Fey's books and Mindy Kaling's books. One was called Bossy Pants, which is hilarious.
What's your favorite music do you like listening to?
I really have enjoyed tons of music, but lately I've been listening to a lot of Mary J. Blige doing covers of classic rock songs like U2 and Led Zeppelin.
Nice. All right. Last song. Any pets? And if so, what kind?
We have a snake. Her name is Lucy, and she's the only other female in our household. So she and I we're buddies.
Oh my gosh. That's great. All right. And now a couple questions kind of like that I wanted to ask you about. This COVID pandemic for the last year has really been a gut punch to our industry. Where do you think we're headed? We have to adapt, right?
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul. And we really need the best sort of most innovative ideas because, like has been said, including by the Biden administration, we've got to build back better. So it's a great time for systems to focus on core issues, system modernization, as we deal with our huge state of good repair backlogs. I think we have to really be careful not to cannibalize those funds for operations, even though in a crisis, that flexibility has been really welcomed, in particular by the federal government allowing transit systems to use their maintenance dollars for operations. Ideally, we grow the operations dollars for transit so systems don't have to pick one or the other and don't have to cannibalize those really important modernization funds. We also, I think, really need to focus on affordability, making sure everyone can access our services, that this is something that we've now seen how essential these truly services are to folks' livelihoods, to the well-being of cities. So these people who take care of us every day, we need to take care of them and make sure that we're ensuring that our services are for everyone. A lot of that rebalancing is happening now as we speak. And I think with an eye toward the future, making sure that we are planning still for the medium and long term for economic recovery, transit's going to be key for economic recovery. We've got to make sure the systems are safe and that they're comfortable and clean. And our transit industry's sort of leaders have been fantastic about that, really, really focusing, and private sector too, on innovative solutions to make sure that we're getting the best technologies, the low touch, the zero touch contactless fare systems and all the rest. But that's fundamental. Thereafter, I think focusing on frequency, you know, and quality of service. A lot of folks talk about this, and Jarrett Walker and other folks and leaders across the APTA, the frequency of services is really important. That can really, I think, help reduce the challenge and barrier of transfers. Nobody likes to transfer. But if that transfer is really quick and easy and the wayfinding is good, it's less painful. And then we can really have this robust network that I think can then develop from there, because we do want to expand. We do need to expand and keep transit thriving, not only for mobility and sort of economic prosperity, but also for climate. We've got to find ways to lure people into transit who have those choices and to really make transit a pleasant and a convenient, easy choice for more and more folks. And that's true everywhere, I think. We really have to help our systems, large and small, urban, suburban, and rural as well.
That's an excellent prescription, I think, for the future. Thank you. And I guess my last question is, of course, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, is from your area there, the Bay Area. Do you think the federal government here in the United States is now realizing that they need to take up a bigger role financially when it comes to operating expenses for transit agencies? I mean, like you said, we're on potentially the third round of COVID relief for the industry. But traditionally, like in Canada and the U.S., a lot of the funds have gone to capital and competitive capital grants and those kind of things. I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts on that? And do you think that's good? Do you think the federal government should take on an increasing role when it comes to federal subsidies?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you for that question. And we so appreciate, of course, Speaker Pelosi's leadership fighting for transit alongside Senator Schumer and many members of Congress, the two chairs with the FAST Act as well, thinking ahead. I think the bill that we saw in the House, the Invest Act from Chair DeFazio and that committee is fabulous. It does raise that level of investment for transit. I believe on the capital side, I'm not sure. I believe so on the operating as well. But that's really the new front, right? It's to reimagine and bring back the federal role in transit operations. It's been too long since Reagan, really, where we saw the decline of federal operating dollars. And why is that? Why can't we have that conversation? We know that's there's been a preference to fund capital, but operations and maintenance, really, we've got to find a way to invest in all of these and reimagine the balance, the flexibility from 80-20 to 50-50 for the federal dollars. In many ways, we do have that flexibility, but to really formally do that, I think is important so that we have that signal and the resources with the larger pie. Again, not just sharing the existing pie and providing right. flexibility, but to bring states and regions and local transit operators into that fold and to bring new dollars to the table.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Tilly Chang, Executive Director of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. Thank you so much for sharing with us some about your life, the work you're doing there that's so important in helping to fund and coordinate all the transportation providers in the San Francisco Bay Area, and helping to take a look into the future, that there is a way out of this potentially existential threat for public transit, especially on the commuter services side where they're hit so much. And a lot of these big companies are saying that folks won't have to come back into the office every day. But there is a way out, and that is to rebalance our services, you said, and chart a new path of services to make sure we're meeting the need of tomorrow's workers, and also the increasing role of the federal government when it comes to that. I think it's a great prescription for success for the rest of this year and going into the future. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Paul. Great opportunity. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Transit Unplugged, powered by Trapeze Group. To stay up to date, subscribe on iTunes or Google Play, or join the conversation at transitunplugged.com. Thanks for listening.